Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good day. This is Glenn, and I'll be reading today from the weekend edition of the Midland Reporter Telegram, dated Saturday, March 11th, 2023. Front page. County officials to discuss library book policy. Commissioner Anderson, it was never her intent to ban books, by Ben Schaefer. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson met this week with public library officials regarding content found in the young adult and children's sections of Midland County Public Libraries. Anderson was intending to find an amicable way to move forward while allowing adults to purchase any titles they choose and removing books containing obscene content like sexual depictions and explicit language from the section, geared toward Midland's young people. Anderson came across library policy that is already in place called the Reconsideration Policy. The Reconsideration Policy allows for anyone who visits a library to fill out a one-page form asking the library for removal or reclassification of a title if they come across obscene content in children's or young adult section. Public libraries nationwide classify young adult books as being available for 12 to 18-year-olds. During Monday's Commissioner Court meeting, there will be an agenda item focused on the policy. Anderson would like the policy to be placed on the county website and made more well-known to the community. When a patron fills out a reconsideration form, they turn it into the library, which has 10 days to act. If a patron is not satisfied with the extent of the action the library takes, they can bring the issue to the library advisory board, and after that, patrons may get county commissioners involved. Anderson said it was never her intent to ban books. She hopes that books containing graphic sexual depictions and bad language will be placed in the adult sections of Midland libraries. If parents then want to check them out for their kids, then that is well within their right, according to Anderson. However, they should not be advertised as books for young people. She said her meeting with library officials was useful, and they agreed that this is a good way to move forward on the matter. Sparks offers ways to improve the electric grid, by Ben Schaefer. Texas Senator Kevin Sparks, Republican from Midland, discussed the state's grid system and how legislators can work to help improve it. Sparks said the state is behind on creating dispatchable power. Dispatchable power refers to an electric power system like a power plant that can be turned on or off to adjust the power output supplied to the electrical grid on the demand of power grid operators. The reason for this, according to Sparks, is because the state has focused much time and federal dollars toward creating intermittent power, wind and solar. If the wind's not blowing or the sun's not shining, there's no power there, Sparks said. The implementation of wind and solar programs has increased the number of interruptible power sources statewide. Sparks has heard that more than 35% of Texas' overall power generating capacity is intermittent. This puts the grid's reliability at risk when the state experiences extreme weather. Sparks said that during the current legislative session, a redesign of how the state's electric market works needs to be addressed. These modifications to the electric market will help Texas attract investment dollars and dispatchable power. According to Sparks, those discussions are being had right now within the Public Utility Commission and the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT. Sparks said there are several ways to go about a redesign of the electric market. Some include allowing the entities who create wind and solar power to have no expectation of reliability. The cost of creating reliability back into the system is all going to come down to the ratepayer, the customer, Sparks said, as one way of going about it. He added another way is to force reliability on all the players in the market, spreading out and reducing the cost for the consumer. Midland posts state's lowest unemployment at 2.7%, by Mella McEwen. Buoyed by a resurgent oil and gas sector, Midland reclaimed its crown as the state's strongest labor market, a position it had held for several years before the pandemic upended global economies. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, also MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, rose to 2.7% in January, from 2.3% in December, the lowest rate statewide. It is also well above the 3.9% reported last January. Odessa reported a rate of 3.7%, up from 3.1% in December, but below the 5.2% seen last January. Midland is trending in the right direction, Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. The entire region is. The rise in unemployment from December to January is largely seasonal, as contract workers' jobs end or those hired for the holiday season leave their jobs, he explained. Taylor marveled at how the region has recovered from the labor market damage done by the pandemic in just a couple of years, with Midland reaching a high of 12.3% unemployment in April 2020. Taylor said the region he oversees, 17 West Texas counties, had as many as 72,000 receiving unemployment benefits during the pandemic. Approximately 2,000 are receiving benefits now, he said. His board agrees that demand remains strong in many fields, from education to health care, truck drivers with commercial driver's licenses, to automotive and diesel mechanics, welders, to HVAC technicians. We really are blessed with great junior colleges, Midland, Odessa, and Howard, and the University of Texas Permian Basin, Taylor said. He estimated 6,000 Midlanders and 8,000 Odessans are enrolled in career and technical training programs. A lot of employers are bringing in workforce, he said. Hotels are filling up. Man camps are filling up. The tight labor market continues to push up wages, he said. The mining, logging, and construction sector, which includes oil and gas, paid $946 million in wages in the second quarter of 2022, according to the Workforce Commission. Midland's civilian labor force jumped about 1,500 to 113,380 from 111,759 in December and from 105,434 last January. There were 110,279 Midlanders employed in January, a gain of just more than 1,000 from December and 8,900 more than the 101,329 employed last January. That leaves 3,101 Midlanders unemployed, up by about 500 from 2,546 in December, but 1,000 less than the 4,105 unemployed last year. Midland lost 100 jobs from December to January for a total non-farm job count of 118,200. The mining, logging, and construction sector led, adding 600 during the month. The manufacturing and the other services sectors each added 100 jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities reported a steep drop, 500 jobs during the month, followed by the government sector with 300 jobs and professional and business services down 100 jobs. For the 12 months from January 2022 to January 2023, Midland added 12,100 jobs for a growth rate of 11.4%. Mining, logging, and construction again led, creating 6,800 new jobs for a growth rate of 20.5%. Professional business services added 1,300 jobs, while trade, transportation, and utilities added 1,000 jobs. The manufacturing and the leisure and hospitality section each added 800 jobs. Private education and health services and other services each gained 500 jobs. Financial activities rose by 300 jobs, and employment in the information sector rose by 200 jobs. The government sector was the only one to see a loss, losing 100 jobs during the year. Statewide, the unemployment rate inched up to 3.9% from 3.8% in December, but remaining below 4% as it has since March 2022. The state added 48,600 jobs in January, reaching 13,782,300 non-farm jobs and setting a record employment high for the 16th consecutive month. While Midland reported the lowest unemployment rate, followed by Amarillo at 3.2% and Austin Round Rock at 3.3%, McAllen Edinburgh Mission saw the highest at 7.1%. Midland unemployment in January 2023, it was 2.7%. In January 2022, 3.9%. Preliminary numbers for January with December numbers in parentheses. Midland was 2.7%, Amarillo 3.2%, Austin Round Rock 3.3%, College Station Bryan 3.5%, Lubbock 3.6%, San Angelo 3.6%, Dallas Plano Irving 3.7%, Odessa 3.7%, Fort Worth Arlington 3.8%, San Antonio New Braunfels 3.9%, Tyler 4.0%, Abilene 4.1%, Sherman Denison 4.1%, Wichita Falls 4.1%, Waco 4.2%, Victoria 4.3%, El Paso 4.5%, Houston, The Woodlands, and Sugar Land 4.5%, Laredo 4.5%, Texarkana 4.5%, Longview 4.5%, Killeen Temple 4.9%, Corpus Christi 5.0%, Brownsville Harlingen 6.1%, Beaumont Port Arthur 6.6%, and McAllen Edinburgh Mission 7.1%. Western United Building to come down March 25th by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland announced Friday the Western United Life Building will be demolished on March 25th. The city announced that a radius from Marionfield East to Lorain and Ohio South to Wall Street will be closed down on that day. The Midland Development Corporation owns the building on 300 West Texas Avenue. board members already approved a contract with Midwest Wrecking Company of Texas for $3.45 million to bring down the Western United Life building at 300 West Texas Avenue, as well as other property downtown. It also was announced Friday that the mother of John Butler will be at the demolition. Butler died after falling from the 11th floor of the building in 2017. City leaders discuss team building by Stuart Doreen. The conversation on developing a better, more productive Midland City Council continued Friday at its annual retreat. A main talking point was that council members would take requests for city staff to the city manager's office. There were concerns, based on previous conversations with staff, that staff members were threatened, even with their respective jobs, if they didn't appear to be working well with council members. Other concerns included requested information that was not ready for prime time or public consumption. They have to be able to say no to requests, Mayor Lori Blong said during the meeting. Worries included the city manager's office not knowing about requests being made of staff members, the power void created by bypassing the city manager's office, that not all city council members have the same information, and that council members want to make sure city staff's time is being considered. With regards to council membership's relationships with each other, city leaders seem focused on improving previous breakdowns in communication, including when texts and emails are used instead of a council member picking up the phone to call another, and some members operated in silos. Also talked about were continuing briefing sessions where all council members could learn information from city staff at the same time and hear each other's comments and concerns. Moderator Lyle Sumick told council members that they had made progress in their efforts since their last meeting at Bush Convention Center in February, and things are better today. Goals discussed during the workshop with staff at the Beale Park Ranch House included upgraded city facilities and infrastructure through investment, having a high-performing Midland City team, making Midland a great place to live, the premier place in West Texas, and having a strong economy with more quality jobs. Community Roundup by Stuart Doreen. City Spring Break Camp. The City of Midland will have the MLK Adventures Spring Break Camp on Monday through Friday from 1 to 5 p.m. each day. Children ages 6 to 12 can enjoy high-energy games, outdoor activities, arts and crafts, movies, and more, according to the city. The cost is $40 for the week. There is no single-day registration available. For more information, visit www.midlandtexas.gov/springbreak. Great American Cleanup /Don't Mess With Texas Trash Off. Keep Midland Beautiful invites Midlanders together for one of the nation's largest cleanups, the Great American Cleanup /Don't Mess With Texas Trash Off, co-sponsored by the Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT. Keep America Beautiful, Keep Texas Beautiful, and Keep Midland Beautiful, also KMB. Participating groups will clean up their designated area anytime beginning March 1st through May 31st. Registered participants will receive trash bags, gloves, and a t-shirt if registered by March 17th. Register at keepmidland-beautiful.org. Community Calendar, Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series event, an evening with Emmett Smith, 7 p.m., March 23rd, Chapp Center, Midland College. UTP Distinguished Lecture Series, March 30th, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Basin PBS Main Street Live, May 19th, 203 North Main Street. Upcoming meetings, Commissioner's Court, 9 a.m. Monday at Commissioner's Courtroom in Midland County Courthouse at 500 North Lorraine Street. Midland ISD Bond Committee. The following is a list of Bond Planning Committee's meetings, which are open to the public to attend. All meetings are scheduled to begin at 6 p.m., and future meeting dates are as follows. Legacy Freshman High School, April 3rd at 1400 East Oak Avenue. Midland Freshman High School, April 20th at 101 East Gist Avenue. Yarbrough Elementary, May 4th at 6000 Riverfront Drive. Bunch Elementary, June 1st at 700 South Jackson Street, and June 20th at a location to be determined. MISD's Bond Planning Committee website will be updated with more information as the process continues. You can find it at midlandisd.net/bond. Credit card fraud reports on the rise in Midland by Ben Schaefer. Midland saw 9.5 credit card reports per 10,000 residents in 2022, a 4.5% increase from 2021, according to a new study by Upgraded Points. Americans have increasingly turned to credit cards to meet their household financial needs, but doing so has dramatically raised risks of credit card fraud in recent years, the study states. In total, Midland had 163 reports of credit card fraud last year. Since 2019, Midland has experienced a 91.8% increase in credit card fraud reports. Midland ranks 27th of all small metro areas nationwide in credit card fraud reports per 10,000 residents. Odessa ranks 21st in the same category with 10.4 reports per 10,000 people. However, Odessa has seen a 2.3% decrease in the crime since last year. Tyler, Odessa, Sherman, Denison, and Midland are the four small Texas metro areas ranked in the top 30 in this category. Here is a summary of the data for the Midland metro area. Credit card fraud reports per 10,000 residents in 2022, 9.5%. Total number of credit card fraud reports for 2022, 163. Year-over-year change in credit card fraud reports, up 4.5%. 3-year change in credit card fraud reports from 2019 to 2022, up 91.8%. For reference, here are the statistics for the entire United States. Credit card fraud reports per 10,000 residents, 2022, 13.5. Total number of credit card fraud reports in 2022, 449,574. Year-over-year change in credit card fraud reports, up 13.5%. 3-year change in credit card fraud reports from 2019 to 2022, up 61.8%. Smaller cities with the highest rates of credit card fraud, reports per 10,000 residents in 2022. Tuscaloosa, Alabama, 77.4. Columbus, Georgia, and Alabama, 26.7. Sumter, South Carolina, 26.2. Texas towns in the top 30, at number 16, Tyler, 12.1. Number 21, Odessa, 10.4. Number 22, Sherman Denison, 10.3. Number 27, Midland, 9.5. Midland Police Department search for Dollar General aggravated robbery suspect by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department is searching for a suspect involved in an aggravated robbery at a Central Midland Dollar General. At about 9:29 p.m. on February 23rd, the male suspect entered the Dollar General located at 2015 North La Mesa Road, where he walked around gathering snacks and then went to the cash register to pay for his items. He gave the cashier $10 for his items, and after he noticed the cashier open the register, he reached into the right side of his jacket pocket and pulled out a metallic revolver and pointed at the cashier, according to a Midland Crime Stoppers Facebook post. The suspect left the store on foot at 9:35 p.m. He stole $1,079.24, according to the Facebook post. The subject is described as a black male standing 6 feet 2 inches and weighing about 250 pounds. He was wearing an Under Armour hoodie slash jacket with the word Under Armour on the back, black joggers with a camo print, and black boots. He had a hood over his head and a medical mask over his face. If a person is the first to submit any information on the suspect and it leads to an arrest, he or she will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3-TIPS, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 23022-3056.
MC graduate Carlos Najera completes apprenticeship program. Midland College Collision Repair Program and Caliber Collision are partnering to develop the next generation of collision repair technicians. On February 16th, former Midland College Automotive Collision Repair graduate Carlos Najera completed Caliber's Technician Apprentice Program, TAP. The Caliber TAP program is 10 to 12 months of hands-on paid collision repair training. Apprentices are teamed with an experienced technician, and under the guidance of a training instructor, they work in a collaborative, supportive environment with a strong, team-focused culture. They learn the latest in automotive technology advancements, such as advanced driver assistance systems, collision avoidance or traffic sensors, in a safe and engaging work environment using state-of-the-art equipment and quality materials. Midland College gave me the foundation I needed to be successful in the TAP program, Najera said. Mr. Ray Salgado taught me which tools to use in each step of the repair process so that the vehicle can be repaired back to factory standards. Working on cars is what I love to do, and now I can follow my dream of doing this for a living. Programs such as the TAP program help to not only develop the technical skills of the apprentice, but also develop the confidence needed to be successful in an ever-changing industry, Ray Salgado, Midland College Automotive Collision Repair Instructor, said. We are excited to have the opportunity to collaborate with industry partners such as Caliber Collision that are willing to invest time, money, and energy in our graduates. Carlos was way ahead of other apprentices because of his training at Midland College, Ray Mendoza, Caliber Collision Training Instructor, said. We hope to continue this relationship for a long time. Nahira was one of three students that completed the first TAP program at Caliber Collision in Odessa. He has now been promoted to entry-level body technician. Currently, former Midland College MISD dual credit student Albert Miranda is in his third month of the TAP program and will complete the TAP program later this year. Out and about, TV star Chet Garner comes to Midland, Trippin' Texas, one day at a time. This was the name of the presentation the Petroleum Club Ladies Association was treated to by Chet Garner, who is known for his role as the creator, host, and executive producer of the 12-time Emmy award-winning Texas travel show, The Day Tripper. Garner explained to the ladies that he learned to respect Texas from an early age because his dad would stop at every single Texas historical marker while traveling as a kid. After practicing law for 3 years, he then decided to follow his passion and inspire others to appreciate Texas. Garner went on to highlight many of his travel expeditions that he has featured in his episodes. He explained that when deciding for his show, he focuses on culture, outdoors, food. Garner highlighted trips from the piney woods of East Texas, beaches, the hill country, and the mountains. He even gave a quiz to the audience about the facts of Texas, with the winner receiving an insulated mug. During the presentation, ladies dine on beef short ribs with fried onion strings, cheese grits, Brussels sprouts, and pecan pie for dessert. Earlier that morning, Garner was treated to a breakfast at Juju's Kitchen by some of the men from the Petroleum Club, where Garner highlighted some of his travels around Texas. Auto home insurance rates in Texas soar by Mitchell Schnurman. Auto insurance rates in Texas soared an average of 23.8% in 2022, 8 times higher than in 2021, and the highest annual increase in at least 20 years, according to the Texas Department of Insurance. In addition, homeowners' insurance rates in Texas rose an average of 10.8% last year, the highest annual gain since 2012. Most owners of vehicles and homes are required to buy insurance coverage, and big double-digit increases could add hundreds in higher bills. The average auto insurance premium in Texas was $1,085, and the average homeowner's policy was $2,124, officials said. Rate increases for auto coverage ranged widely among the state's largest insurers. GEICO raised auto rates 53.9%. Allstate raised rates 37.8%. Farmers raised rates 32%. Progressive raised rates about 22%. And State Farm raised rates 17.1%, said a spokesman for the Texas Department of Insurance. The growing expense from insurance adds to the financial squeeze felt in many households, which are already dealing with the highest inflation in 40 years. The price gains for Texas insurance easily outstrip the pace of inflation. For 2022, the National Consumer Price Index rose 6.5% for all items and 14.2% for motor vehicle insurance, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. By that metric, the cost of auto insurance for Texans rose two-thirds more than the national increase last year. This is just way, way too much of an increase, said Michael DeLong, a research associate at the Consumer Federation of America, a Washington nonprofit. For many years, we've been advocating for regulators to stand up for consumers and carefully look at insurance rate requests and not be afraid to disprove them. But from what I can tell, Texas seems to be doing nothing for consumers, he said. The Texas Department of Insurance, known as TDI, said it reviewed 2,590 rate filings in 2022. Insurers withdrew 229 filings for various reasons, and 108 were rejected for technicalities, such as filing under the wrong business line or not providing enough information. No filings were disapproved, TDI said on its website. That strongly suggests the Texas Department of Insurance is basically rolling over for insurance companies, DeLong said. But a TDI spokesman said the agency saves consumers over $16 million because companies withdrew some requests in response to regulators' questions. Insurers said they have been hit hard by inflation with rising costs for supplies and materials, along with labor. The value of vehicles and homes has also grown sharply in the past few years, and that raises the cost of replacing them. You're gonna pay more to insure the same car than you would have 2 or 3 years ago, said Rich Johnson, a spokesman for the Insurance Council of Texas. Cars are more expensive, and there are more accidents, more injuries, and more medical bills. In 2021, the cost of replacement parts rose 13%, and rental car rates rose over 50%, the insurance group said. There also were 4,573 fatalities on Texas roads in 2021, an 18% increase from the year before. Last year, Johnson said, industry officials had projected a 20% increase in Texas auto insurance rates, and they're expecting another 10% increase in 2023. Johnson said the rate trends in Texas were about the same that we're seeing nationwide. DeLong said he did not have average rate increases by state or across the country. It's often difficult to compare insurance costs because there are so many tiers of coverage and providers offer service through multiple affiliates. Last year, North Carolina insurers proposed a statewide average increase of 24.5% for homeowners coverage. After studying the data, regulators negotiated an increase of 7.9%, saving homeowners over $751 million in premium payments, the state insurance commissioner said. In Texas, the cost of construction materials rose 25%, driving a double-digit increase in replacement costs for homeowners, and pushing up the cost of homeowners' coverage, according to the Insurance Council of Texas. The February 2021 winter storm that shut down the Texas electrical grid for days will ultimately cost Texas insurers $11.2 billion for losses, the Insurance Council said. What are consumers to do? Shop aggressively. Compare quotes from a half dozen companies, maybe more, DeLong said. Out and about, Cotillion Parents Night. Hundreds of local 5th and 6th grade students attending the John D. Williams Cotillion wrapped up their 5-week course with their parents as a dance partner. During the first 4 sessions, students learned dances such as the waltz, jitterbug, Texas two-step, and the foxtrot from an instructor certified by John D. Williams Cotillion. With each dance session, a topic was also highlighted, such as how to improve face-to-face communication and first impressions. While Sunday dress attire was required at all sessions, participants did enjoy a 50s theme night, which highlighted teamwork and leadership. During one session, 6th graders were treated to a special 3-course dinner at the Petroleum Club, which coincided with the theme, dining etiquette and manners. In keeping with tradition, on the final night, parents were invited to attend and dance with their children and see what they have learned. The program is recognized as an authority in educating young people in the art of social skills and social dance training, according to the John D. Williams Cotillion website. Dual credit students pass EKG technician certification exam. On February 23rd, students from Midland High School and Legacy High School who are enrolled in the Midland College Dual Credit Patient Care Technician Program took the EKG Technician Certification Exam. All 37 students enrolled in the program passed the exam administered by the National Health Career Association, NHA. The Dual Credit Patient Care Technician Program is part of the MC/MISD Health Sciences College and Careers Academy, a four-year exploration of health-related topics and career preparation. During their senior year, students pursue industry certifications in nurse aide, EKG technician, and phlebotomy. In addition to preparing students for entry-level healthcare certifications, the Academy also offers students opportunities to begin preparations for more advanced careers in the healthcare industry. MC Grad now serving students as financial aid advisor by Rebecca Bell. In 2011, Brittany Brown was serving in the U.S. Navy on the USS Bataan in Norfolk, Virginia, when the ship received orders to deploy during the Arab Spring protests and subsequent humanitarian crisis and political military instability occurring in Libya. She was 21 years old and had been in the Navy for 2 years. I graduated from Midland High School in 2007 and really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I worked at HEB as a cashier, Brown explained. Then in 2009, I enlisted in the Navy for two reasons. I wanted to travel, and I knew that eventually I would be able to go to college on the GI Bill. I was able to do both those things. Typical naval deployments are 7 to 8 months. However, we were deployed for 11 months. I spent time in Spain, Sicily, Greece, Dubai, and Jordan. Greece was my favorite place. It is beautiful, and the people are very friendly. I also enjoyed the archaeological history of Petra in southern Jordan. During her time in the Navy, Brown served as a welder and plumber, not a traditional job for a female. However, she said that she was one of three women serving in the same position on the Bataan. Because we were female, we were assigned more of the plumbing jobs than the welding jobs, Brown said. I'm not sure if that was because they thought the welding would be too strenuous for women, or if it was because they felt the men would do a better job. At any rate, we made it work. Also while in the Navy, she met and married her now ex-husband. She received an honorable discharge in 2013 before her son Devin was born. Then in 2014, Brown started taking courses at Midland College financed by the GI Bill. Since I had welding experience, but not any formal education except the training I received while in the Navy, I decided to major in welding, Brown said. During the time that I was in school, my daughter Josephine was born, so there were a few semesters that I had to stop out and not take any courses because caring for a newborn and chasing after a toddler were pretty time-consuming. We were also traveling between California and Texas due to my ex-husband's active duty service, so taking classes wasn't feasible. In 2020, Brown graduated from Midland College with an Associate of Applied Science degree, and then she continued her education at MC. Last May, she graduated a second time from Midland College, this time with a bachelor's degree in organizational management. I find it very unique that Brittany has a degree in welding and then decided to continue her studies to receive a baccalaureate degree in organizational management. William Christopher Brown, MC Department Chair of English, said, "Most students who pursue the college's organizational management bachelor's degree have received associate degrees in a business-related field. I taught her in technical and business writing and remember that she was smart and worked hard to excel." Dan Ledbetter, MC welding instructor, was also impressed with her. Last July, Brown began working at Midland College as a financial aid advisor. In this position, she assists students who are applying for federal financial aid and she processes students' reports. "This job is completely different from my Navy assignments," she said. "However, I find it very fulfilling and I have great coworkers. The job makes me feel good." In her spare time, Brown enjoys watching television, reading and playing games with her children who are now ages 9 and 7. She also occasionally welds for fun. "I like the art side of welding," Brown said. "In fact, I recently made some artwork from my grandfather's old horseshoes." She still enjoys traveling, but her recent travels are now closer to home, mainly camping and enjoying the lakes in the Austin area. Brown said that one day she would like to travel abroad again. Costa Rica is on the list of countries she would like to visit. Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American on Sunday, March 12th. All Stars. OC sends musicians to TMEA by Ruth Campbell. Four musicians from Odessa College recently attended the Texas Music Educators Association convention in San Antonio. Normally thought of as gathering of all-star school musicians, there's a Texas two-year all-state college band and choir that OC musicians participate in. They include vocalist Alyssa Vaught and Rachel Holder, and bass clarinetist Ulysses Rodriguez, and French horn player Alyssa Torres. Torres also sings, and Bullitt plays the harp. Holder said there were quite a few colleges represented. "It was really fun. I got to feel like I was in high school again. Because we went back in high school and I got to do it again, so I got to relieve my youth a little bit," Vogt said. Holder said she was surprised at how big it was since it was the first time she had attended. On the other hand, Vogt said it was smaller than she remembered. "We met quite a few of our fellow vocalists. So whatever was in our section with us, we got to chat with during the rehearsals," Holder said. Rodriguez said he was an all-state selection in high school, but didn't go. "But being able to have the opportunity to do it again was actually a lot of fun. You get to meet a lot of new people, experience a lot of different things. I appreciated it more because I was able to grow a lot with everybody and with Mr. Eric Baker, with his guys and with all the other instrumentalists. I was able to grow and come out of my shyness shell and be more open with everybody else," Rodriguez said. He added that he was surprised at how large the convention was. "I was expecting it to be big, but I wasn't expecting it to be quite as big. Everywhere you went, you saw kids with their IDs walking everywhere, walking from HEB to the convention center, walking from the hotel to the convention center. There's a lot of people," Rodriguez said. He added that he was going to pursue music as a career and hopefully be a classical musician. "It was cool meeting everybody else because you get to see different mindsets on music, what people really want to do and how they think about it," Rodriguez said. Holder said she had enjoyed experiencing a high-level choir where everyone came prepared and had such amazing voices was beneficial. "I think it forces us to step up to a level and work a little bit harder at the music. Of course, the music we make is much better that way, when everyone plays together," Holder said. Boyd agreed and said it helped her with her composition. "I'm working on a composition piece right now," Boyd said. Torres said she was thrilled to go to the convention and it allowed her to learn new things and work with other people and try to match their sound. Eric Baker, chair of visual and performing arts at OC, said the college takes students to San Antonio as a part of the Band and Choir Directors Association. "Through this experience, everyone gets to get outside of their own perspective and work the network with each other and all the musicians." Baker teaches band, and Juan Martin Hernandez is the choir director. Baker said they had vocalists attend the convention for a long time. This is a fantastic group. They're some of our best students across the year, and I've taught here. All of the students have been wonderful, but these particular students are very driven. They're very passionate about making music. They're very professional, and there's a lot of fun. I thought we had a great time driving down and chatting on the bus and eating barbecue and having all kinds of fun down there, Baker said. Hernandez says it was the first time he had brought singers to the TMEA convention. Of course, it's very exciting to have students from our department, which is known for its small department, but we're able to be part of a bigger thing. The experience is not for me, but for them. We've had many more times of doing this, but what matters is the experience for the students. I think it's important for them to also experience different conductors, and it's good for them to get out and experience different ensembles with other singers as well. It was an overwhelming experience for me, for sure, because there's so much happening. You want to do everything, and there's not enough time to do every single thing, but it was rewarding in the sense of getting these young musicians to participate with other musicians from around Texas. What I like about these experiences, especially about choral singing, is the idea of using your own body as an instrument to make music with other people. I feel that you're very connected as one whole group. I can tell that see them performing on the day of the concert that they're very happy to be there, Hernandez said. The conductor the vocalist had, Craig Jessup, who led the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Hernandez said it's important to work with conductors you know and learn ways to make music differently and see different rehearsal techniques. He added that he enjoys watching them rehearse and sing different approaches. You keep collecting tools at how to fix things as you watch other people rehearse and conduct their ensembles, Hernandez said. Council meeting begins at 1 p.m. Tuesday by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council has three big topics on its plate Tuesday: replacing the city manager, fentanyl, and hearing the results of an investigation of alleged bullying by Mayor Javier Hoven and Council Member Chris Haney. The Council's day will start at 1 p.m. with a specially scheduled meeting to discuss what attributes they'd like to see in a new city manager. Michael Lunt of T2 Professional Consulting will lead the meeting along with Susie Price, a hiring assessment expert from Georgia. T2 was hired by Hoven for $338,000 within hours of a 5-2 vote from fired city manager Michael Morano and city attorney Natasha Brooks on December 13th. According to a presentation given last week by T2, the council will select the superior performance attributes of the next city manager during Tuesday's meeting. They'll also go through a process that will remove their bias, help them eventually compare the candidates to the benchmark they've set, and their interview questions. To expect to have a candidate hired by mid-July, early August. During the council's workshop at 3 p.m., the council will engage in the discussion on fentanyl, a synthetic opioid 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine. It killed more than 107,000 people in the U.S. between September 2021 and September 2022 and had been responsible for several deaths in Nectar County. The Odessa American reported in April 2022 that 93 locals had died of drug overdoses from 2019 to 2021. At that time, the youngest fentanyl overdose victim was a 12-year-old boy. Two 15-year-old boys also had died after taking fentanyl. According to the Odessa police, M30 pills, which are laced with fentanyl, are among the top three most popular drugs in Odessa after cocaine and methamphetamine. They're especially popular among school-age kids. It's a heartbreaking drug because it's killing kids, and it's killing kids that take it on time. You don't have to be addicted. You don't have to be an addict. It's none of the other things that have the stigma attached to them, OPD Chief Mike Gerke said during a recent interview. During the City Council's regular meeting at 6 p.m., Attorney Tommy Sheen is expected to give the Council a presentation of the findings of an investigation he conducted after downtown Odessa Executive Director Casey Hallmark twice stood before the Council and accused Hoven and Haney of being bullies. She resigned a month later. Hallmark claimed Hoven once told her to watch her back because OPD was full of murderers and he had gladly accepted her resignation because she was a crazy liberal. She had also said Hoven said it was ungodly for her to continue going by her maiden name. She further alleged Haney confronted her during the Parade of Lights in December because she was upset A banner identified him as a councilperson. She quoted him as saying, "I'm not an expletive councilperson. I'm a councilperson, and I will be referred to that as such." Hoven and Haney have admittedly denied Hallmark's allegations, with Haney citing his Christianity as a defense. As of Saturday afternoon, Hallmark had not received the results of the investigation. I think it's very interesting that it was brought about because of my outcry, and I wasn't notified of the results. It's also interesting that the attorney who led the investigation was not hired to render an opinion. He was hired to fact find, and the city attorney was to render an opinion on the matter. Hallmark said via text, "It appears to me that the city hired an outside attorney to appease the public, but has no real interest in pursuing or investigating what actually happened. If they did, the outside source would be rendering their opinion on what they found during the course of the investigation. This is now the second time I've found out via the media that a verdict has been reached on the investigation involving me that I had no idea about." Hallmark filed a formal complaint against Downtown Odessa board member Tisha Crow after Crow called her disgraceful on Facebook. City Human Resource Director Charles Hurst decided Hallmark had no recourse under existing city rules, but Hallmark only learned of it following a call from OA. Texans struggling with food insecurity. Staff writer. With pandemic-era programs ending, No Kid Hungry Texas polled 1,000 Texans and found large percentages of people struggling with food insecurity. Parents in rural Texans are struggling particularly hard, with 40% of parents and 44% of rural respondents having experienced one or more symptoms of food insecurity, such as skipping a meal or running out of food. Many middle-income households are seeking charitable food assistance for the first time, with two-thirds of those annual incomes between $50,000 and $100,000 saying they'd worry about their ability to afford groceries if faced with the loss of just 2 weeks' income, a news release said. The poll also showed that Texas overwhelmingly want lawmakers to take action, with 90% agreeing that addressing childhood hunger should be a top priority for the state elected officials, and nearly 95% agreeing it should be a bipartisan issue. Mia Medina, program manager of No Kid Hungry Texas, said the poll was conducted in January. It's gotten harder for families to afford groceries, and many families are facing hunger as a result, even middle-income and working families, said Medina, who grew up in Big Springs. Some of the more interesting data points that we found was that about 73%, so three-quarters of Texas adults, are having a hard time affording groceries compared to early January 2022. The rising cost of food and other essentials like utilities, clothing, rent, and gas are the most frequently cited reasons that made it harder to put food on the table, Medina added. At the start of the pandemic, many families were assessing food banks for the first time in their lives. And especially now that we have record inflation and expiration of pandemic-era relief programs like free food meals for all and additional SNAP benefits each month. Now that those are ending, we know the families are really suffering, Medina said. Parents and rural Texans are struggling particularly hard. About 40% of parents and 44% of rural respondents in the poll experienced one or more indicators of food insecurity in the past year. 26% of parents and 24% of rural Texans work with their household would have enough to eat. One Tarrant County respondent shared, "I can barely afford to feed my 5-year-old daughter 3 meals a day. So I go without so she can eat, and I'm a threshold-based income where I make too much money for help, but I don't make enough to get by." We're hearing that a lot from families about how difficult it is, the realities they're facing to ensure themselves are fed and their kids are fed too, Medina said. More than 1,000 Texans from all over the state responded to the poll. The food insecurity rates in Ector County are really interesting compared to the rest of the state. Overall, food insecurity in Ector County is about 14.3% in Texas. That number is about 13%. When it relates to child food insecurity, that number is even higher by about 22.2% of Ector County kids experience food insecurity compared to the state that's 18.9%, Medina said. One in three respondents in the poll with an annual household income between $50,000 and $100,000 a year report that they were also experiencing one or more symptoms of food insecurity, like skipping a meal or being able to access or eat nutritious foods due to expense. It's really an interesting look at how hunger has affected everyone right now, especially with the record cost of living in many Texas communities, inflation, and the end of these pandemic relief programs as well, Medina said. She added that it's a perfect storm. I think what's really interesting, too, is that 90% of Texans agree that ending childhood hunger should be a top priority for the state's elected officials, and 95% say the addressing childhood hunger should be a bipartisan issue, Medina said. One of the things No Kid Hungry Texas is doing is requesting an appropriation via rider to the Texas Department of Agriculture's budget for funding is an eliminate reduced price meals. This would mean school children and their families would no longer have to pay for reduced price meals. Meals would be free. It would also reduce the financial and administrative burden on the schools, and then, of course, help parents as well, because these reduced price meals are up to 40 cents per breakfast and up to 40 cents per lunch as well. They can certainly help the parents stretch their budget, given they'll no longer have to worry about the price of school meals, Medina said. Ector County ISD has continued to provide free meals to all students even after the pandemic. Some districts are able to participate in what's called the Community Eligibility Program. It's a federal program that's based on the need of the community. You hit what's called an identified student percentage. You're able to serve free meals to all students, but that is unfortunately not the case for every school district or even every school that can qualify for this program. Because there are pockets of poverty throughout the state in every community, unfortunately, some families are not able to access that. Particularly in rural areas, we see less uses of community eligibility programs, Medina said. She added that 40 cents doesn't feel like a lot for some families. I'm sure, but if you have multiple children and you're in the bubble of poverty, you have to pay that for meals could be really helpful for you, she said. No Kid Hungry is a national campaign to end childhood hunger in America. In Texas, No Kid Hungry works with schools, local nonprofits, elected leaders to help launch and improve programs and give all kids the healthy food they need to thrive, she said. Andrews man accused of rape. Staff writer. Andrews man was arrested Friday after a 15-year-old girl accused him of raping her at an event venue in West Odessa. According to the Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a sexual assault call at Far West on West University on January 8th. When they arrived, they spoke with several witnesses who told him they found a girl outside the party venue who said she'd been sexually assaulted by Junior. The witnesses told deputies the man she was speaking about was Junior Aguilar, and one of them showed deputies the Facebook profile of the suspect, who was later identified as Jesus Aguilar Rondan, 26, the report stated. The girl was taken to Medical Center Hospital by ambulance, and while there, a sexual assault nurse examiner found evidence that was consistent and indicative of sexual assault, according to the report. In addition, a forensics interview was later conducted at Harmony Home, and the girl indicated she had been sexually assaulted by Rondan. She also picked him out of a photo lineup, the report stated. Investigators were able to find Rondan at the time, but he was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail Friday on a warrant for sexual assault and secondary degree felony. Rondan remained in jail Saturday on $30,000 surety bond, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement were told. Odessan accused in fentanyl case. Staff writer. A 22-year-old Odessa man was arrested Friday after authorities said he sold a confidential informant 200 fentanyl pills for $500. According to the Ector County Sheriff's Office report, Cesar Porras set up an appointment on Thursday to sell the pills on Friday to someone he didn't know was working with the Sheriff's Department. Porras showed up at the arranged meeting spot in the 7800 block of Western University at the arranged time and conducted the transaction, the report stated. Porras was arrested on suspicion of delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years of life in prison. A $75,000 bond was set, and he remains in the Ector County Jail Saturday afternoon on a U.S. Marshal's hold and an Immigration and Customs Enforcement hold. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid, 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine, and has killed more than 107,000 people in the U.S. between September 2021 and September 2022. Ballroom Marfa to put on free film screening next week. Staff writer, Marfa. Ballroom Marfa will be holding a free film screening of One Day in the Life of Noah Piquato next week at the Marfa Public Library. The event is scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. March 16th and is open to the public. The film is directed by Zacharias Kunak of Izumu, an Inuit collective of media platforms and produce, and distributed Inuit language films and media art by and for indigenous people. The film opened at the Canadian Pavilion of the 2019 Venice Biennial. The screening and part of the group exhibition, Ecstatic Lands, which is currently on view at Ballroom Marfa until May 7th. Closing celebration of Ballroom Marfa's current exhibition will take place May 6th and 7th. To learn more about Ballroom Marfa and exhibits, go to tinyurl.com/2STM39V8. Legislators support saving our park. Staff writer, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, TPWD, and its commission welcomed the support expressed by legislatures during a Thursday hearing of the House Committee on Culture, Recreation, and Tourism. Committee members reiterated that their desire to continue communications with TBWD, Vista Corp, and Todd Interest to save Fairfield Lake State Park. For Texas, Fairfield Lake State Park is a rare treasure providing vital recreation space, said Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission Chairman Archie Beavers Alpin III. When I hear Texans talk about this park, I hear them call it our park. I heard it again today when Freestone County Judge Linda Grant talked about the significant economic impact our park and its 80,000 annual visitors generated for our county. She registered that it's at our park is our park. It's everyone's park, and I look forward to coming back to the table to try to find a compromise that would allow Texans to keep it. In a news release, committee members included Chairman Trent Ashby, voice supported by preserving Fairfield Lake State Park for public use. Additionally, committee members asked TPWD to consider temporarily reopening the park. TPWD staff are discussing options for reopening the park for today use. The park closed February 28 after Vistra terminated its lease with TPWD in preparation for the sale to Todd Interest, which plans to develop the property. In fiscal year 2022, the park welcomed 82,555 visitors. Visitation has increased significantly in the past 4 years, up from 58,991 in 2019. TPWD has committed $70 million in infrastructure, including buildings, barns, residents, roads, utilities, boat ramp. The committee also discussed issuing, including access to two cemeteries located on the state park grounds. Fairfield Lake State Park has two known cemeteries on the property that include grave sites dating back to the 1880s. Chancellor Union Cemetery and Freeman Cemetery, which was discovered on the property in 2002. TPWD was honored with protected and grave sites within the park property by shielding them from public exposure and by commissioners an extensive archaeological study in 2007 to better understand those sites and their other historic archaeological features. The impact of diverting 14,000 acres feet of water from the lake, considered one of the nation's finest bass fishing locations, supported by TPWD's Toyota Sri Lanka program, the lake has produced 69 lunkers since 2020, making it one of the most produced fisheries maintained by TPWD. Alpin pointed out this could reduce the lake shore by half and devastate aquatic life. Public access to Fairfield Lake ceased when the park closed. Obituaries. Cypress, Texas. Barbara Nell Tankersley Kirkendall, age 85, passed away peacefully on February 19th in Cypress, Texas. Barbara was born to Carl and Mildred Tankersley in Corpus Christi, Texas, on November 19, 1937. Most of her school-age years were spent in Odessa, Texas, and she was a 1955 graduate of Odessa High School. Barbara married Bill Kirkendall in 1970 and celebrated 46 years of marriage in Odessa before his 2016 passing. While raising three daughters, they spent many years at various horse events, including shows, play days, and junior rodeos. Barbara loved playing slot machines, antiquating and shopping at estate sales. She was acquired many different collections. She enjoyed her membership in the local Antique Depression Glass Club. Barbara was a dedicated worker and had a long career in oil and gas industry, where she focused on property management for El Paso Products, El Paso Hydrocarbons, Meridian Oil, and BNSF. In 2019, she moved to Cypress, Texas to be close to family. Barbara wished to be cremated and her ashes buried in a family burial plot in Jefferson Cemetery in McMahon, Texas.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.